Hey team, just a bit of context before we get into this episode. I recorded this about a week ago as a fun little Ask Me Anything. One of the questions you sent through was about why I left my former job and what happened to my old podcast, Cooking the Books. Now, when I recorded this, I wanted to be honest, but I was still being diplomatic. So I tried very hard to do both. I'm not a person that really likes to invite drama. However, if you follow me on social media, you'll know that a couple of days ago, I saw red. I posted on social media some more information about what really went down. Frankly, even that was still the diplomatic version. So if you missed that, those posts are still up. You're welcome to read them. And we also have the information I talk about here. I didn't really want to re-record this because, A, it's the weekend. And also, maybe it's useful to know just how hard I was trying to be diplomatic until now. Honestly, don't know why I bothered. However, I hope that context and timeline helps make everything make a bit more sense. Onwards.
Invest into yourself and your skills and your earning power, and then you have so many more options from there. Most people start small and snowball up to something bigger. You have to take the first step up the ladder. I couldn't have done this without financial independence. There's no way I could have, because I've got two kids and a husband and a mortgage to pay, and I need to keep food on the table. And frankly, I don't want to live a life where we're financially insecure. So there's all of these very real parts of it where it kind of needs to work. See, I very much live my career by, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. So I guess I will end up keeping this somewhat brief, and you can read into that what you like. It was truly part of my personality. I'm just bad with money. There's no helping me. What can you do about it? Well, you can do anything about it. It's just whether or not you have the right motivation and if you believe you can make a difference. I'm Frances Cook. Welcome to Making Sense, supported by KiwiBank. This week, it's something a little different. There have been a few changes around here recently, and I know that's left people with some questions. So I thought, why not open it up to social media and say, what are the questions on your mind? Well, the whole range flooded through, everything from my favorite investing strategies to why I quit my old job. So let's whip through, give you some answers. All right, team, here we go. First solo episode in a hot minute, so let's do your questions. First up, is there any hope for people just starting out to achieve financial independence? Always. I'm not sure at what stage you're saying you're just starting out and if you're feeling sort of behind. I think everyone, when they first start trying to get towards financial independence, feels behind, feels like it's insurmountable, and yet there are so many people that do manage it. And that's why I'm really enjoying focusing on talking to people who have, I hate to say like real people, like real stories. Everyone's real, obviously, but you know, those real people stories, you know what I mean when I say that, from all different walks of life, because then we can see all of these different situations, people have managed to make it work. It's just different tactics for different situations. You know, you can either, the easy ways to grow your money either involve using more time or using more money. So if you're younger, you have more time, you don't need as much money to get ahead on the financial independence front. You can rely on compound interest over time. If you're older, then you have to figure out a way to put a bit more money into it and make that strategy work for you. But there are so many strategies that can work. That's exactly the whole point of all the various people who come on this podcast. There is always, always hope. When I first started looking into financial independence, it felt insurmountable. And yet, what was it, 7 years ago, I started taking things really seriously. And I would count myself as not financially independent to the point where I never have to work again, but financially independent enough to take risks like exactly what I'm doing now. Did I ever think I would be a business owner? No. And I could do that because I am financially independent. If you'd told me 7 years ago this is where I'd be in that short amount of time, I would have never believed you. So definitely it's possible. Keep listening to the podcast for all the various strategies that you might be able to pick up that can work for you. Okay, advice for 26-year-old you. That's a great one because 26-year-old me, things like Sharesies didn't exist yet. Kernel didn't exist yet. Hatch. InvestNow might have, but it was not very well known if it did exist then. So that's not to say I'm super old. I am kind of old. I feel old these days now with being on social media. But it's just that things have changed so much. So if it was 26-year-old me who was starting now, I'd say get into investing. Even if it's $5 a week, go for it. It will make so much difference, so much faster than you think. If it was 26-year-old me then with the resources that were available then, the things that were accessible then, probably, to be honest, what I ended up doing, which was focus on your career and invest into yourself and your skills and your earning power. And then you have so many more options from there. I mean, there's all sorts of things we talk about on this podcast of what you can do to make money go further. And that's always really important because you have to handle your money smartly. But of course, things are easier when you've got more money coming in the door. Of course they are. You can invest more. You have to make fewer trade-offs. So one of the first big investments, I think, always has to be your career, your earning potential. And then once you've got that income coming in, you can do so much more with that. So that would actually probably be my advice to a 26-year-old now as well. But also, if you're doing things now, invest. Make sure some of that money is going towards investing. So powerful. So great. Is there a way to get your KiwiSaver out without buying a house? Other investment schemes are better. I agree with you to a certain point. So let's address the first bit of your question first. So getting your KiwiSaver out without buying a house? Not really, unless you are going to die soon. There's a clause in there for if you're going to die soon. I hope that's not you. Or extreme hardship, which you have to apply to your KiwiSaver provider for. And I also hope that's not you. You never know. But if you're just hoping to put it in different investments, then probably not. This is where I sort of hedge my answer to you, though, because KiwiSaver has amazing perks to a certain level. So you want to use KiwiSaver the exact right amount and then probably do your own thing. And this is where I remind you of the disclaimer that's at the end of every episode, right? I don't know your full situation. I don't know what's going on in your bank account. I don't know your risk tolerance level. So I'm speaking generally here. But as a general rule for most people, when you put 3% of your money into KiwiSaver, then you get the employer match and you get the government tax contribution. That is an incredible, you're usually doubling your money from the start there. You want to make sure you're getting that. That is free money that you're not going to get elsewhere. You also get investment returns on top of that. Your KiwiSaver, if you're looking at other investments like the share market, you can put your KiwiSaver straight into the share market and get those share market returns as well as employer and government contribution, right? So you double your money and get the investment returns. But the problem is once you've maxed out those government and employer matches, once you've put in, for most people, it's 3% of your income, after that, it doesn't start to make as much sense to lock your money up until it's 65 because you're not getting the same rewards. So for my money, for most people, it makes sense to get in for that 3% match and then learn how to invest outside of it and get a bit more flexibility while still getting investment returns. If anyone is listening to that and feeling scared and thinking, I don't know how to invest outside of KiwiSaver, a lot of KiwiSaver providers have mirror funds, where they have the exact same fund type that you can invest in through KiwiSaver. They have the same thing, but outside of the KiwiSaver scheme. So you can also do that. If you're nervous to do a bit of investing on your own, you can ask them about a mirror fund or what other funds that they have. And you can invest into the same fund outside of KiwiSaver, so you can pull your money out again if you want to do something like start a business or retire early or whatever else you might want that money for. More flexibility. So yes, I agree that there are other investing options that can be good, but I do think you still want to make sure you're getting those employer and government contributions. Don't forget about those while you're being, you know, excited about other investing opportunities. I love these questions. They're good. There's so much variety as well. What small things can I do to kick off investing when I don't have a lot of money at all? So I think if you don't have much money, the first thing you want to do before you start investing is just make sure you've got your financial foundations sorted first. You don't want to, and I talk about this in both of my money courses, you don't want to start investing before you've got emergency savings sorted and maybe even some more substantial savings sorted after that. Investing is for money that you're okay to leave alone for 5 to 10 years, because sometimes the market does funny things that we weren't expecting. The power of investing comes over time, and you want to be able to leave it there for 5 or 10 years. So if you don't have much, then do make sure you have a savings account sorted first. And the standard sort of numbers that you'll see thrown around and that I agree with for most people is $1,000 as an emergency fund for things like something goes wrong with your car, or the cat has to go to the after hours vet, or any of those things. You want $1,000 easily accessible for emergency, something's gone wrong in your life. After that, rough rule of thumb is about 3 months of your non-negotiable have to pay these bills expenses. And I'm talking rental, mortgage, enough for your power bills, enough for your food bills, like only the things you cannot go without, because things like job loss happen. And if you have 3 months stacked away, this is going to save you from the worst of life surprises. Now, if you do have those sorted, fantastic, well done, then you can start to invest into things like the online platforms. And even honestly, $5 a week, $10 a week, $50 a week, $100 a week, people have all sorts of different amounts that work for them. What you need to do is go through your spending and say, what can I put away regularly without it being too much of a problem? Most people could do $5 a week, and people will say, oh, is that really worth it? Yes. It's so much better than $0 a week. Here's the thing about starting small is that you can't start on rung 5 of the ladder. You can't just jump up there and you're already away and you're putting away $500 a week. Very few people start there. Most people start small and snowball up to something bigger. You have to take the first step up the ladder. So A, starting small with investments is so worth it. But B, that is what leads to you getting bigger things, because you will start to make money off those investments. You can reinvest those. It all starts to build up over time. This is how your money increases. It starts going to work for you instead of you having to earn every dollar by yourself. And then once you've started to build up a little bit of a nest egg, you create the ability to take more risks in your own life because you have this financial cushion. So you can start to reach for riskier job opportunities that might not pay off, but if they do, you're going to be earning so much more. Or you can reach for riskier investment opportunities that, again, might not pay off, but if they do, huge payday. You build up to those things by having the small investments first. So the $5 a week, even if you never go past that, super worth it. But it is also how you create those moments where You see an opportunity and you can reach for it because you have that financial safety net. So super worth doing. Just start with whatever you think you can contribute every week, every fortnight, create an auto payment and stick with it. All right, next one. Financial book recommendations. Is this a trick question? I mean, this feels like one of those things where someone's like, what financial books do you recommend? And it's like, are you going to be vain enough to recommend your own book? And the answer is yes, I am. So I've written two books and I think they're both great. That's why I wrote them. The first one is Tales from a Financial Hot Mess. That is the book to read if you are just starting out. It is the full money 101 of budgeting, saving up for a house, sorting out your KiwiSaver, starting investing. It is everything I wish I knew when I was in my early 20s that I instead had to learn the hard way, but you don't. You can just read a book. And then I've also got my second book, which is Your Money, Your Future. That is all about financial independence, investing, and how you can level up your money so that you may or may not ever have to go to work again. And let me tell you, I have used all of the strategies in my books and made a huge difference to my life. So I do recommend them. For books that are not mine, I would say Your Money or Your Life is a great one. It is one where so many people I have talked to have said that this was a watershed moment for them, where it really changed how they looked at their money, what it could do for them, and what it meant in terms of their life. I mean, we talk all the time on here about how money isn't everything, but it impacts everything that is important. You know, when you've got more money, you can create more time. You can spend more time with your children. You can have less stress at work because money gives you options, right? And Your Money or Your Life is a book that really, really goes into that, the values, and how you create those options. And then the next book I would recommend is The Simple Path to Wealth, which I believe is by J.L. Collins. And that is Investing the Simple Way and the Smart Way. So many of my own investing philosophies align with this book. So I really like it. It is a classic. It is a classic for a reason. So those would be my recommendations. Ooh, I like this one. It's spicy. Are you scared to start your own business in a recession? Yes. I think starting your own business is always scary, right? I was actually talking to someone else from the media industry today who has recently lost their job. I quit. They did not. They unfortunately lost their job. And they are looking at starting their own thing. We were having just a bit of a chat about it. And I hope it goes really well for them. I really do. But I think it's always scary no matter what's going on, right? And I think there are times in life when you have to feel the fear and do it anyway. And there are a lot of people who in a recession will start businesses out of necessity. And I think necessity breeds all sorts of creativity and can create really interesting opportunities that you look back on and you think, man, that was horrible at the time, but what an amazing outcome it led to. And I'm hopeful that that is where I will be with this business. I have been very careful in how I've created this business, that I have thought long and hard about. Everything comes down first and foremost to what is useful for other people, right? Because I know I'm not going to stick with this business if I don't feel like I am genuinely helping people. So first and foremost, what do people need when we're talking about money? How can I best reach people? What is useful for them? And I know a lot of people like listening to me in podcast form. So I was like, okay, podcast is the core of it. And then there's all these other ways that people like to access my content. So my newsletter is really important for people who want to get some of the tips and tricks from the podcast, but maybe they're not listening to that week's episode or they're a bit busy that week. And then social media, right? And then from there, working backwards to say, now, how do I make that a business? How do I make sure that we're starting with the mission and we're giving good value to people? And then how do I make money out of that? And I was really, really careful to try and set up what I think would be a good business. It was terrifying. Of course, it's terrifying. But for starters, so far, so good. It's looking really good so far, which is exciting. And secondly, again, I couldn't have done this without financial independence. There's no way I could have, because I've got two kids and a husband and a mortgage to pay, and I need to keep food on the table. And frankly, I don't want to live a life where we're financially insecure. So there's all of these very real parts of it where it kind of needs to work, right? But I know that our finances are sorted to a certain level where I could give this a crack for a few months, see if it worked, and then if it really didn't work, crawl back and hope someone would employ me. See how we go. But I knew I had the time to give it a proper go. And that is the power, again, of financial independence, where I knew that I had time to figure things out a bit. And I'm really, really grateful that I gave myself that breathing space to figure things out. So there we go. Terrifying, but with financial independence, a little less terrifying. On that note, what was your full-time job before? Welcome. If you are new and you didn't know my job was before, I think a lot of people already thought I was self-employed, which is quite interesting to me. So no, before I was a journalist. I've been a journalist for well over 10 years now. And I did a few different things. I reported on crime for a while. I was a political reporter for a while. And then I got into business and personal finance. And that has been where I've stayed for the last 10 years or so. Really, really getting to know the business and personal finance world, and basically getting to just find things out and talk to interesting people for a living, which was amazing. Oh, I also, for a while, as part of that, managed all the podcasts for The Herald. But I hated that because I'm not a manager. I'm not someone who ever wanted to be middle management. And that was not ever what I wanted. I like getting my hands dirty. I like talking to people. I like interviewing people. I like creating the content itself. So I lasted a hot second in that job as the podcast manager, but it was really good in terms of giving me that solid background of knowing podcasts inside and out. So that was good. But yeah, I researched the business, personal finance, money world for a living, which was really fun. But now I get to do things on my own terms. Next question is, oh yeah, this one is really spicy. What happened to cooking the books? I loved it. So, there's only so much I can say on this point. So for those who weren't around for that journey, Cooking the Books was my previous podcast. I loved it to bits. I was very sad to murder her, but I did. What do I want to say about this? See, I very much live my career by, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. So I guess I will end up keeping this somewhat brief, and you can read into that what you like. It comes back to a little bit of the point I made before, where everything that I want to do, I truly believe in what we do here. I truly believe that money is an important way to make people's lives better. And that by knowing more about money, people can make different choices, whatever sort of situation they're in. Some choices are easier than others. Some are more accessible than others. But there's at least a few things that are available to everyone and can make life better. And for different people in different situations. There might be lots of different things they can learn about money that will make their life better. So I truly believe in what I'm doing here and in trying to help people learn more about money. I want to help them improve their lives and the lives of the people they love. So when I really do believe in that, that makes it more difficult for me sometimes to make the more cynical decisions that others might be okay with. And I am not willing to compromise on what my listeners and followers need to hear. And I don't just write about FU money, I have FU money. So if I feel like I'm not being respected, and if I feel like my listeners aren't being respected, I am able to leave. And I did leave. So, yeah, you can read into that as you like. That is the general theme of what happened there. What I do want to say on that point, though, is I am so grateful to the listeners who've already followed me onto the New Making Sense podcast, that I am so grateful to the sponsors who are part of this and that have joined me for this journey, because I talked to a lot of people to make this a reality, to make this a business that could work. And I turned down several businesses. Turned down four businesses that wanted to be part of this. They didn't get it. They didn't understand how important the relationship with the listeners was, and that you can't trick people. You just can't. If you try to trick people, they catch on to it in a second. So I'm really grateful for the sponsors that are part of this journey. They get it. They understand that it's about helping people, and they are making it so I can do this work. And I'm really grateful for the listeners that are here and that we're still doing this together. So it all turned out for the best. Yay. All right, on to the next. Ooh, do you miss writing about non-financial topics? Yes and no. For the vast majority of the time, no, because I'm very lucky to have a very full life outside of work too, right? My family life, all-encompassing at the moment with two young kids, my friends and my poor friends, who are mostly very neglected, but who I fit in as much as I can. My wider family, who at this point are mostly just helping me with various kid things. And I hope at some point in the future, I will have more energy to be able to help them in return. But, you know, the very full life that I have outside of work helps me not miss too much of the non-financial aspects, because I scratch that itch outside of work. I will say, in terms of the work stuff, when I left political reporting, and that was a big call at that time, because I was interested in business, I was interested in finance, and I thought, oh, I'd love to try that out. But politics is often seen as the pinnacle of journalism. Political journalism is often seen as the peak. And so there was part of me that thought, what am I doing? Am I taking a step down? Is this a good idea? And then when I left politics, literally the day that I started my new job was when John Key resigned as prime minister, which puts a little bit of an age date on me. And it was very unexpected. You know, here's this guy that was super popular at the time, and he's just saying, I've had enough. I remember I was driving back from covering some business event, and I had the radio on, the news radio, and they had this breaking news, John Key has resigned. And I had this crystal clear FOMO of no, because I just knew that Parliament that day would be electric. You'd be running around the corridors trying to catch people and interview them and get the behind the scenes of what was actually going on. There would be press conferences. You'd be filing like a mad thing. You'd be, you know, turning stories around in 2 minutes flat. So there's an energy and an adrenaline on a breaking news day like that that is, I don't miss it much, but on days like that, I would miss it. And so I had this moment of FOMO. But then they actually, they hadn't replaced me yet in Parliament. So then I got a call. I'd only switched departments within the same company. So I got a call from my boss saying, actually, can you go back to Parliament for the day and help out? Yes. So I didn't miss out at all. So that's the only time I've ever missed it. And I didn't end up missing out in the end anyway. So all worked out. Oh, okay. We're back into some investment questions. How do you personally manage the currency risk of your investments? Do you buy hedged products? Okay. Love this question. This is a little bit of a nitty-gritty question. For those who haven't taken my investing course, you might not know what currency risk is. So to give a really brief overview, currency risk for your investments is the fact that, say you want to invest in the S&P 500, which is the 500 biggest companies in the US. Now, when I as a New Zealander go to invest in that, my New Zealand dollars have to be changed into US dollars in order to make that investment, right? Because I'm investing in another country, which means, you know, the dollar goes up and down on both sides, right? So I might want to invest one day and the US dollar has gone up in value. That means I can't buy as much. If I go to sell and the US dollar has gone up even more, then I might be getting back more New Zealand dollars, or maybe the US dollar's gone down and I'm not getting as much back out of my investments when I sell. So there's a risk as the dollars on both sides go up and down in value. There's a risk that it impacts your investments. How do I personally handle that? Is I am a dollar cost average investor, which means I put in a certain amount every week or month. You know, I have always timed it around my paychecks. Now that I'm working for my own business, my paychecks are lumpier, so I've just auto-paid it into every week. By putting it in, drip feeding over time, you kind of smooth out the ups and downs. You end up getting the average of the various dollar valuations at different points in time. So instead of having a hedged investment, different hedged funds will have strategies to try and take out that currency risk. That's what a hedged fund does. Hedged fund, not a hedge fund. Two different things. I know. Sorry. That's kind of confusing. But a hedged fund will try to take out the currency risk with different strategies to balance that out. But I don't need to worry about that because I'm drip feeding my money in over time. I'm kind of hedging it myself. So that is, again, why when I talk about in the investing course, putting money in regularly every week or every month or whatever your paycheck works out to, that's another bonus of it. It's smoothing out currency risk. And if you go to cash out at a certain time, if you drip feed some money out again, you're doing the same thing in reverse. So that's what I personally do. There are other strategies that are available, but you asked what I do. That's what I do. I missed this one getting in here. How is your hair so shiny? Thanks. That was one of my friends who asked that, so I think she's just buttering me up. But I'll take it. Honestly, postpartum, I think the only thing a woman feels good about is probably her hair. And even then, sometimes not, because it falls out for many of us. So I'll take any compliment I can get right now. Ooh, this is a good one. What's your favorite luxury product you'll never scrimp on? Mine's fancy toilet roll. Love it. Gotta look after your butt. I think I would scrimp on anything if I really had to, but that's not the spirit of the question, is it? That's not fun.
Well, you know, if life really goes sideways, you can always cut back.
Yes, thank you. We don't need to be lectured. Okay, what would I not want to cut back on? Probably, and this is going to feed into my previous question, beauty products, because I am vain. I am really vain. This is probably my biggest personality flaw. I am so vain. I hate it about myself, but I also just can't get past it. It's just I care too much about what I look like. And I've got to the point where I'm just going to accept this is a personality flaw. There are other things in my personality that I will work on. This one I can't be bothered. I'm vain. It is what it is. So probably beauty products, things like Nice shampoo and conditioner. I hate to say it, it has made a difference, but that's also partly because I never have time to heat style my hair anymore, so I need my other hair products working harder. Nice serums to keep your skin looking nice. Yeah, beauty products. I would not want to scrimp on them. That would be the last thing I would cut back on. Actually, I'd love to know, do other people have other things that they don't want to cut back on? That's a good one. Message me on what your things are. Here we go. We're almost to the end, which is good because it's tiring talking to yourself, doing these solo episodes. There's so much more work than me just asking a person questions and then sitting back and letting them carry the episode. Great question here. Just listen to the episode about how to pay off your home loan faster. It was fantastic and made so much sense. Yay, I'm glad you liked it. But what about for people who can maybe only save a couple of thousand a year? It's not really enough to warrant floating, or is it? What if you're just a terrible saver, asking for a friend, or live almost week to week? How much difference does using a mortgage offset actually make? This is great because I think a lot of people feel this way. And this comes back again to what I was saying earlier about whether or not it's worth it investing only a little bit. And it's the same thing with, is it worth only putting a little bit extra on your mortgage? It's so worth it. It really is. And it's partly because, you know, you call yourself there a bad saver and you're living week to week. I want to gently challenge you on that you are making that part of your personality, that you say, I'm just a bad saver. You can choose not to be if you have the right motivation. Take this from someone who had, as part of my personality throughout my entire 20s, I am just bad with money. And I had ingrained that as part of who I thought I was. And I was so wrong. But let me tell you, the friends I have from that time in my life are very surprised now that I am a financial educator for a living, because it was truly part of my personality. I'm just bad with money. There's no helping me. What can you do about it? Well, you can do anything about it. It's just whether or not you have the right motivation and if you believe you can make a difference. So if you have maybe a couple of thousand spare a year, or again, $20 a week, it's worth it, because my very first mortgage, very first house I bought, look, it was a small house. The mortgage wasn't enormous because I was broke, right? But my very first house I ever got, I got this little pay rise. It was $20 a week. And I put it into an online mortgage calculator to say, what would happen if I put this on the mortgage? And it knocked years off. $20 a week got me mortgage free years earlier. And I just had someone email me, actually. They responded to my most recent newsletter saying they had put in, it was $35 a fortnight, I believe. And that had got them mortgage free a year earlier. Amazing. Now imagine if they can put in another 20 on top of that. You know, they get used to that. A year down the line, they get a pay rise. They put another 20 on top of that. Maybe they can knock another year off the mortgage. And you're just constantly making these little steps. Before you know it, you're mortgage free 10 years earlier. You know, but you don't get there without taking that first step. So yes, it's always, always worth it. Even just that little bit. Just Google mortgage calculator. Put in how much mortgage you've got. Put in how much extra you can pay, and it'll show you. Any mortgage calculator will do. Whatever the first result is fine. Put in what you can pay extra, and it will show you how many years earlier your mortgage will be paid off. Because every dollar extra that you put on your mortgage wipes off, usually, depending on where you're at, but for most people, it will wipe off at least another dollar. So you're getting 100% return, because it costs you in interest, costs you in fees, and it's doing that over 30 years. So it's much, much bigger than you realize. And so it's wiping off all of those future payments you would have made too. It's more powerful than you think. So even if it's a little bit, so worth it, because I also think it probably won't stay being just a little bit. All right. Oh, this is the last question. Well, this is the last question I can fit. There were a couple more. I'm really sorry if I didn't get to your question. I tried to answer questions that were similar to each other. And that sort of represented a bunch of what other people were asking too. If I didn't get to your question, please send me a message. Be nice, but do send me a message saying if you still want me to answer in a future episode. We can always do more of these if you enjoy them. But anyway, last question for today. How many ETFs is good? And if you can't buy a house, what's the next best thing to do, please? So ETF, for those who haven't come across them, they are your best friend. When you are starting investing, they make investing really easy. They are an exchange-traded fund. They are a simple, low-cost way to invest in the share market, and you are investing in more than one company at once. It's a really good, broad, diversified, it's the pick and mix. The pick and mix lollies of investing, where you can pull everything together, you get a bunch of different things at once. You're not just eating licorice all sorts all day, every day, and then licorice all sorts. You get totally sick of them and you think, why did I have this investment at all? No, you've got a bunch of different things in that ETF, and it's a really good investing strategy. ETFs are still the core of my investing strategy. I got sidetracked there explaining what an ETF is, and I can't remember the question. Right, how many are good? Look, the whole point of an ETF, right, is that you're investing in usually hundreds of companies at once. So you can have just one if you want. If you want to do, if you're doing just one, probably something like a global fund is what you'd be looking for, which will get you in on the biggest companies around the world. So you are having more than one industry, more than one country. It's really good. We go on and on and on about diversification, which is just invest in more than one thing. A global fund is great. And again, the core of my investing strategy, because I'm at a time in my life where I do not have very much time or brain power. So I still use a global fund as the core of my investing strategy because I am really busy with the kids, with work, with everything, and it just keeps me going. So it's good no matter what stage of investing you're at. So you can have just one. If you are particularly interested in something like AI or tech or healthcare, then you might also get another fund that focuses on that. You can get ETFs that focus on certain interest areas. And so you might have one global fund and then you say, I really think AI is the next hot thing. So I'm also putting some money into this AI fund. But you really don't need many if you're going to for an ETF. The whole point is that you're investing in hundreds. Some of them have thousands of companies in them. And you're basically investing in the idea that businesses make money, the economy over time makes money, and you want a piece of that. Super easy, great way to invest. Love it. Then you also said, if you can't buy a house, what's the next best thing? Look, this is a personal opinion. Other people will have opinions on this. But for my money, this is why I love the share market. I just think it makes so much sense because for a house, you might need $100,000 for a deposit, right? That's really hard. Doable, but hard. And you might have a few years that you're going to be building up to that. What do you do in the meantime? Share market, $5 a week. You can get going. You can get started. Your money starts growing and you're away. There's much lower barrier to entry. You can use things like ETFs to make it much simpler. I think the share market's great. That's why I bang on about it here all the time. All right, so that's all the questions that I pulled together from this one. If you have more, send them to me. If you like this type of solo episode, or maybe you don't, get in touch, let me know. This whole thing is about figuring out what is valuable for you. So I hope you enjoyed it. It was nice for me to just jump behind the camera for once and have a chat to you. Don't forget to subscribe to Making Sense so that you never miss a trick with your money. And you can also follow me across all the different social medias to make sure you get all sorts of extra bonus money content and that you can stay up to date on things like my toddler taking ridiculous small bites out of apples and then leaving the entire apple behind. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Francis Cook NZ. Most importantly, subscribe to Making Sense so that we always stay in touch with each other. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.